Growing cable news channel.
Valley Talk on News Talk 1580 KGAL.
Good to have you with us on Valley Talk today. I'm Jeff McMahon.
And I'm Hasso Herring.
Hasso, our guest host every Tuesday here on KGAL, lifelong newspaper man and author of hh-today.com, a website that deals with issues, topics, all things local. And we'll be talking about topics from Hasso's website throughout this Valley Talk program today. We're sponsored today by Corwin Insurance, employing only the most reputable insurance companies, employing a team of dedicated insurance professionals committed to providing quality insurance services and maintaining long-term relationships with their clients. That's Corwin Insurance in Corvallis, 301 Southwest 4th in Albany, across from the Bi-Mart Shopping Plaza, 2231 Santiam Highway. Corwin Insurance, our Valley Talk sponsor. Today, Hasso, I thought it might be interesting to talk about the coronavirus in regards to the response that Governor Brown took towards it and the steps that she took in hopefully reducing the spreading of the virus throughout the state of Oregon.
Well, there's really not a whole lot else to talk about, you know, these days. But it's a good good thing to consider. In some places, you know, around the world anyway, governments have decided to shut down. They've ordered people to stay away. In England, for example, people are allowed out of their house once a day for certain things, exercise, but not they can't go very far. And in fact, if you there's a photo was circulating on the social media,
yeah,
about a woman sitting in a park by herself. I mean, there was nobody around, and a cop starts on a motorcycle, stopped and rode out to her in on the lawn and told her to, you know, get out of there or something. I mean, and that's typical of some of the what some of the countries have done.
It's pretty severe.
And in Oregon, and of course in the United States generally, but also in Oregon, we've been much more moderate about that. The governor has said, you know, stay home and save lives. But she hasn't sent the police after anybody, and legal sanctions for people who violate certain orders of the governor under emergency conditions, Class C misdemeanor and all that. But in fact, nobody is thinking of enforcing any kind of orders. The governor has, you know, issued an order, but nobody really thinks of it as an as an order. Every day you see people out and about doing, you know, their walks and with their families. A lot of people are riding bikes in Albany these days, by the way, lot more than before. It's interesting.
That's an activity that you can do, the walk or the riding of the bike, where you have real good control of how close you come to others. You can still stay at a safe distance if
that's
you
right.
choose to.
But the only thing that really is an order, as far as the governor is concerned, is she has closed certain businesses.
Right.
Or told them to close. I don't know if anybody has actually defied the order and stayed open, or what might have happened if that had been done. So the restaurants we know, all of them are closed for customers in their dining rooms. Some of them have takeout service and they're trying to stay afloat. And by the way, if you have a favorite restaurant and you want to order if you want to keep them going after this outbreak, be sure to go and order stuff and
right.
pick it up.
You can afford it. Go get some takeout.
As often as you can. Right.
Yep.
So that is, and a number of businesses, retail businesses, have in effect closed. And I don't know to what extent that is actually an order. What the governor has done is, you know, you're not supposed to have public gatherings of more than 10 people. And so movie theaters are shut, bowling alleys, all that kind of stuff, all closed. But again, I'm not sure that there's any police power behind this. The reason those places are closed is that the governor has asked them to close, or to, you know, phrased it in the terms of an order.
And they've complied.
They complied because that's what, you know, good citizens do. And so in general, you know, about half of Oregon, I would say, is shut down. And a lot of businesses or manufacturing industries, they are keeping going. They have, and that's a good thing, because otherwise a whole lot more people would be out of work.
Right.
And they have instituted workplace safety rules. You know, they've put tape on the floor where to indicate 6-foot distances and mm-hmm. all that kind of stuff. And presumably many of them are wearing masks and all that. So the governor, I think, has tried to do a sensible thing. She has said, look, the way to slow this coronavirus outbreak down is to stay away from other people so you don't inadvertently pass it on.
Right.
Or you don't catch it. And you can't catch it and you can't pass it on if you're not near anybody. Makes perfect sense. And amazingly, almost all of Oregon is doing exactly that. Not because the governor is going to put people in jail if they don't, but because people are responsible. And, well, for one thing, they're afraid of getting the illness, but
sure.
also they're responsible and they don't want to contribute to the spread. So I think overall, all in all, the governor has done the right thing with the approach that she has taken, because it has evidently worked. Now, how do we know it's worked? We know that when you look at the numbers in Oregon, the new cases that are reported every day, new cases of COVID-19, have all stayed every day since the outbreak began, have been with under 100. And I'm reading off starting, March 18th through the end of March and then the first part of April, the number of daily new cases, something like 26, 23, 24, 18, 57, 69, 58, so forth. And then in early April, they began, they rose a little bit, 90, 74 the next day, 100 the next day, then back down to 69 and 64. Now, I don't know how many people get sick in Oregon generally every day. Probably a lot more than get sick
sure.
with COVID-19.
Yeah.
But in any case, these numbers certainly seem, in a state of 2.5 million people, 69 new cases of COVID-19 don't seem an overwhelmingly threatening statistic. So I think that's, in terms of deaths, we're even better off in terms of the number of new deaths reported in Oregon are usually but 1, 2, or 3, sometimes 4 a day, which is a very far cry from what's going on in other places, certainly in some of the more populated states in the United States and in other countries that have more people.
Not knowing all the factors that are contributing to this, one might think that actually Oregonians have done a pretty darn good job of staying away from each other during this time, as was prescribed by the governor.
Evidently. So that part of it, I think, is working okay. What we don't know yet exactly is the long-term effect of the actions that have been advised for Oregonians to take, and that they, for the most part, as I say, have taken. And that result includes, how many businesses are going to be out of business by the end, by this time this is over. Now, right. I would say a lot of them are shut down for now, but how many are not going to be able to come back? And how many people, not too long, a few days ago, it was reported that, the number of unemployment benefit applications skyrocketed to like 90,000 suddenly,
right.
But there had just been a trickle before.
In fact, there's been some difficulty with applying. They haven't had enough staff and the ability to keep up with the huge amount of unemployment applications. And so a lot of people who have been calling in, for example, always get a busy signal all
yeah.
day long. All throughout the open hours for the employment department, they cannot get through and apply.
So
it's been tough.
They're overwhelmed in that sense. But the real the big question is how many of these people are going to be without a job when this is over.
Right.
And then how many of them, how many people who now pay, have been paying property tax? I mean, property tax was come out, you know, they're supposed to be paid every fall. And normally the collection rate is something like 90, 95%. Mm-hmm. The others catch up later. But how many of those are not going to be able to pay their taxes this fall? And then how does that affect the fabric of local government that we have? I mean, the schools are closed now, and the chances are in Oregon, they're closed on through April 28th, mm-hmm. and they're probably going to be closed the rest of the school year. And the hope is that they'll be open again in September, or maybe late August, I guess. I don't know, around Labor Day, or just after. So the question is, you know, what about school budgets? I mean, they're set, obviously, and they're going to be spending money, but the question is, are they going to get any money in, or how much? They're going to get some, obviously, probably most, but they're not going to get all the money that they expected. And, of course, much of the state school funding comes from the state, and the state is not going to get all the income tax revenue that they were counting on. And so that is going to be a problem for them. And then, so while we hope that schools are going to be reopening, we don't know how long they're going to be able to maintain being open after the school year starts. And so that's one of the consequences that we haven't really thought about very much. Mm-hmm. We are now in a partial shutdown because people voluntarily are shut down, and the restaurants and similar businesses are, you know, obliged to shut down. But what about next year? A year from now, what are we gonna look? What is it gonna look like? And Oregon has taken the approach that has been taken generally in the United States. There's a country in Europe, Sweden, that has taken a different approach, and I've been wondering what their experience is like. And yeah. They have said, the government there has said to its citizens, look, we're not going to shut anything down. We're not going to prohibit anything. I think they did close universities and high schools, but they let other schools stay open, younger kids' schools. And they didn't close restaurants. They didn't close shops. They didn't bar any assemblies except those of more than 50 people. So life in Stockholm and other places in Sweden has gone pretty much on as usual.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it turns out that their rate of COVID-19 is much larger than Oregon's. Sweden is about 2.5 times the size of Oregon in terms of population. They got about a little more than 10 million people. We have, you know, 4.5, or not quite 4.5. And so they have had, I wrote that down the other day or this morning. They've had 7,200 cases of COVID-19 and 475 deaths. The numbers are much larger than in Oregon. We've had about 1,000, a little more than 1,000 cases versus 7,000 in Sweden. And we've had around 30 deaths, and they've had 475. So offhand, you would think, well, they've made a big mistake. But on the other hand, their economy is still functioning. And when and if the COVID outbreak diminishes in Sweden, they're still gonna have a working economy.
So then, what you're saying is, in the real answer is going to be in how the economy comes back after this is over, and how many people are back to work when this is over. That's going to really be the real judge,
big
contributing factor into grading how everybody did in response to the COVID outbreak.
Jeff, thank you very, very much for summarizing this in much fewer words than what I was going on about here.
Well, you were saying it very well. I'm just wanting to make sure I was following.
That's right.
That was a clarifying statement.
That's right. And the government in Sweden has said to its citizens, look, do what is reasonable here. Be smart. We don't want you to get this stuff, and so stay away from other people. But try to carry on as much as best you can, generally.
But clearly, that cost more lives.
It's cost a lot more lives than it did in Oregon, obviously.
If you consider that Sweden has twice as many people as we do.
That's right.
Right.
So.
And they should have only had twice as many deaths and twice as many cases, but they had many times more than that.
Yeah. So, but they are sticking with their policy, even though they get a lot of criticism for it. We'll see in a year or so how everybody else has come out, as opposed to how Sweden has come through this thing. We'll see.
Economically.
Right. That's right.
Yes.
And in the meantime, I think it is worth remembering Oregon has it's worth pointing out. Every day you get a report in the media saying, look, the number of cases has grown by so and so much. As I said, as of yesterday, the health authority reported that there were 1,132 total cases of COVID-19 in Oregon. And that number goes up every day because yesterday they reported 64 new cases. And so today, chances are they're going to report about the same number, and it goes up every day. What they don't report, and I wish they would, is how many people have gotten over this thing. Every once in a while, you get a report that people have recovered. The local veterans home in Lebanon announced the other day that of its residents who had contracted this COVID-19, 13 of them had recovered. I mean, that was really a remarkable thing for them to say, because
all their residents are older folks.
They're all old, more or less old, and many of them have debilitating conditions of one kind or another. That's why they're in a home like that. That was pretty good news. And you would think that maybe the health authority in Oregon generally could also pay attention to the recovery rate. Because otherwise you get the impression that things are getting worse. When you look at the number of new cases every day, you get a different impression. That impression is that the number of new cases is staying pretty much level. It's been under 100 every day ever since this started.
In fact, the last 2 days are down significantly from the previous.
That's right. And in fact, that is not entirely unique to Oregon, because generally around the country and maybe around the world, things are beginning to level off. And that has been noticed with the result that, for example, the stock market had a tremendous gain yesterday, because everybody thought, well, this is now on the down slope of this, or on
underreported in the news media, by the way, the gains that the stock market made. They certainly jumped all over the declines.
Well, that's right.
But it's just barely mentioned in the newscasts, I've noticed now, as just a quick little blurp before the commercial or something. They'll say, the stock market's up, blah, 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 and that's it.
Well,
no big long, minute and a half story on it in the, on the radio or television news, featuring, various actualities with people's voices talking doom and gloom, instead of having people say, hey, this is looking better now. We seem to be none of that. Just the stock market's up by blah, blah, blah.
It could be that people in the media are reluctant to create false hopes. And they don't want to necessarily.
You're being kind to the media.
I really am.
Yes, you're painting them in a very good light.
I mean, generally, doom and gloom is much more newsworthy.
Than
great news. But in this particular case, I think maybe there's even some justification for not. The way I've been talking, it sounds as though I'm downplaying the seriousness of this whole thing.
No, and you're not. That's not what you mean to do.
If that comes across and people start being cautious at all and just ignoring all the advice they get from health authorities and so forth, then, the outbreak could get worse again.
So we've got to follow through and continue to do what we've been doing.
We got to continue to do what we're doing, but we also have to start thinking about restarting certain things
right.
that allow people to make a living. and people to lead a relatively normal life, even with precautions. The other thing we got to start thinking about, and maybe we don't have to think about it because they're going to happen anyway, is what is going to be the long-term result of this particular outbreak, this worldwide pandemic that nobody had foreseen 3 or 4 months ago. And suddenly, wow, the whole world is practically affected by this thing. So what does that mean for life as we go on after this? One of the things I think it means is that we quit, at least in this country, we quit importing as much stuff as we've been importing. We are so, so dependent on stuff made, you know, especially in the third world and in China, that, you know, we just can't live without any of that stuff. And if China ever decided to shut down completely, we'd be out of stuff. I mean, we'd be out of things. We're going to have to start figuring out, even though it may cost a little more, or even a lot more, we may have to...
go ahead and start making them ourselves.
Making things once again in this country. And the other thing that chances are it's going to happen is that this whole idea of the global interconnectedness of the world is going to get a second look. I mean, globalization right. has been, you know, the theme for the last, 30, 40 years.
Yep.
The increasing interdependence and interlocking interests of all around the world without regard to national borders. Well, if we didn't have quite so much interchange between all the countries in the world, an outbreak in some wet market of China wouldn't affect the rest of the world.
Or at least not nearly as much.
Not nearly as much.
Right.
And that would be something that we have to consider. For example, I mean, now, you know, we're screening, supposedly, I guess, to the extent that people come, arrive in this country from abroad, we screen them somehow. We give them a test, a medical screen, I guess.
Like take the temperature or something.
Yeah, and maybe that's going to have to be the rule from then now on. You're going to have to prove that you're healthy before you can enter the country. That would be a big change, and maybe every other country is going to do the same thing, which would really, you know, cut down on worldwide travel. As it is, a few months ago, nobody thought at all about, oh, I got a little extra money, I got a couple of weeks, I'm going to go to Paris, or go some other place, visit Singapore, or go to Thailand or something.
Right.
No problem. Well, from now on, maybe you don't think that way anymore. I mean, that's going to be a change of life for some people. Not for me. I don't have to go anyplace anyway. But it would affect parts of the national or the global economy. No question about that. So the whole idea of the completely open borders around the world is going to be it has taken a hit here in this episode, and we're going to see the results of that when it's over.
That's Hasso Herring. I'm Jeff McMahon. This is KGAL's Valley Talk. We will resume the program right after a quick break.
Think you're paying too much for insurance? Put Corwin Insurance to work for you. Corwin Insurance, your local, reliable, independent insurance agency for your personal or business needs. Since 1977, in Albany on Sanium Highway Southeast, across the street from Sizzler, or in downtown Corvallis on 4th between Jefferson and Adams. Check out their website, corwininsurance.com. That's Corwin insurance.com. Or come in for a free quote today.
Who doesn't want a better portable toilet? Are you putting up with portable toilets that always smell and never have enough paper, even if they've just been cleaned? Well, Better Portable Toilets cleans a toilet, and when they do, they are clean. The floors, walls, seat, and urinal are scrubbed, then rinsed with fresh water. The interior is dried with clean towels, so the unit is fresh, dry, and ready to use. Each toilet is stocked with 5 rolls of TP and a fresh, clean scent. Better Portable Toilets cleans every toilet every time this same way. Ladies, you'll appreciate the pink toilets with a built-in sink, nightlight, purse hanger, mirrors, flowers, and no urinal. That's right, no urinal. You are paying for a clean portable toilet. Don't put up with a smelly toilet. Call Better Portable Toilets and get what you pay for. That's a clean toilet. Hey, who doesn't want a better portable toilet? Check them out at betterportabletoilets.com. Locally owned and operated by really nice people, and you can tell them Wayne White said to call.
No place feels as safe and sound as your home, but hidden dangers could be lurking. Hi, I'm Tom Kreitler.
And I'm Leslie Segretti with today's Money Pit Home Improvement Minute.
Older homes are at risk for lead, which affects brain development in children. Lead was banned from paint in 1978, but can linger even if walls have been repainted. Make sure to have your home tested by a pro.
And if you think that calories are the worst thing in your refrigerator, think again. More than 76 million Americans come down with foodborne illnesses each year. Your first line of defense, keep your fridge clean and make sure raw meats stay sealed in glass containers.
And while water can get you clean, it can also make you sick. Residential water supplies contain everything from remnants of medicines to radioactive toxins.
Yeah, a whole house water filter can help. Also, tap versions that filter water for you to use for drinking and cooking can help as well. I'm Leslie Segretti.
And I'm Tom Kreitler. For more Money Pit home improvement tips, visit MoneyPit.com.
You live in a money pit.
A life well-lived is beautiful to behold, full of people sharing moments of laughter and tears of joy, the rush of love, excitement, the feeling of pure contentment. From encouraging words you'll never forget to good deeds done right when they were needed most. In these moments exist the good stuff, the memories we value most, the experiences that make life worth living to the fullest. Awesome do for. Celebrate life.
Did you know your shopping decisions can make a difference in your community? It does with Points for Profit. When you shop locally with our businesses and save your receipts, you help 30 local charities who work to sustain our community. For a complete list, visit pointsforprofit.org. And remember, shop locally, serve locally, sustain locally with Points for Profit. This message is brought to you by the following Points for Profit sponsors. Please shop them and save your receipts.
Northwest Apparel and Graphics in downtown Lebanon can help you with screen printing, embroidery, signs, and banners for one or more product with no setup fees.
The Jalot Home Team of Keller Williams Realty Mid-Willamette is Oregon's number one real estate team, and they're here for all of your real estate needs. See them at their Lebanon location or call Marianne Honeyman at 541-409-2594.
Sanium Place Wedding and Event Rental Hall in Lebanon is located on Main Street, or visit them at saniumplace.com.
Into the woods and onto the waters. Listen to Northwestern Outdoors Saturday nights on Smart Talk 1580.
Jeff McMahon and Hassel Herring on KGAL's Valley Talk. Hassel is our guest host every Tuesday. We were just talking about grocery shopping there with the COVID-19 situation and the fact that in the produce aisle of your local grocery store, the normal way you check things out, like if you're going to buy an avocado, is you pick it up and make sure that it's fresh and good and firm and the right, you know, that everything's right before you buy one. And that being the case, you got to figure that, what, there's been 40, 50 people have touched that avocado that you're buying.
When you're looking at a tomato or an apple or something like that, you got to think about all the people who have touched that in the last couple of hours.
Yeah.
And so I don't understand why grocery stores haven't done something about their,
Maybe that was too unwieldy of a task.
It's probably impossible. I mean, I guess. I mean, although the way it's laid out, you can't really do much about it. But you could at least put up a sign saying, don't touch the fruit unless you want to buy it or something
like
that. Yes,
just look at it and grab the one you want and take it. You know.
Now, a lot of the stores, I guess, have started limiting the number of people who can be in there at any one time.
Right.
But while that is, I think, important to the distancing element of trying to prevent corona, the touching things, you can't.
No,
they haven't done anything about.
Tough problem.
I worry about, you know, when you're checking out and you put your card in there and then you gotta push your the PIN,
right.
PIN numbers.
I've been using a knuckle to do it. The back of my hand, a knuckle.
Does that really help? Everybody else has been using his knuckle too. For all you know, you got a bunch of contaminated knuckles around town.
That's very possible.
So it's just troublesome. Those things, they might have been thought of. I don't know if there's anything that could have been done, even if it had been thought of before.
Well, you said something about signs or a sign, and that leads us to our next topic. This one, Hostel has an article about the new welcome signs in Albany, some that are up and some that are to be put up. They're beautiful, and Hostel has details and interesting facts about these signs at his website, hh-today.com, including photographs. If you haven't seen them yet, that's hh-today.com. So let's talk about the new welcome signs.
Well, you know, you got to talk about something other than the coronavirus every once in a while. And that those signs came just in time for that to take place. The public information officer at City Hall, Marilyn Smith, alerted the paper and me last week to the fact that on Monday, yesterday, these new signs were going to be installed. About 3 years ago, somebody had written to me written to me about the welcome sign, the Welcome Albany sign on Highway 20 in North Albany, saying that it was really in shabby shape and should be replaced.
Well, it was in shabby shape, but that was 3 years ago. It got worse.
And that's right. It was about, you know, almost 40 years old. It was installed about 30-some years old. It was installed sometime in the 1980s. I remember standing there on the day when they dedicated that sign.
You were there, yeah, on a rainy day, right?
It was a rainy day, and we were all standing in the wet grass there and watching the sign to be, I guess, dedicated somehow. So ever since then, I've been had kind of a mild interest in that sign, only because I remember how it came to be. And so in any case, over the years, it got worse and worse, and got repainted several times. It was plywood, I guess, or some. I think plywood is right. And so elements got to it, and so people started noticing. And 3 years ago, the city guy that I talked to at the time, Ed Hodney, the parks director, said, yeah, he'd like to get that replaced one of these days. And as soon as he had a design and a way to pay for it, he would get that done.
Sure.
But it took a long time. And in the meantime, Ed got in charge of the downtown redevelopment or urban renewal work, and got tasked with developing a project for wayfinding signs. And he thought, you know, the welcome signs, mm-hmm. Could be part of this wayfaring deal. Wayfaring. What's the matter with me? Wayfinding sign deal.
Yeah, you said wayfinding the first time.
And that project kind of limped along under the direction of the CARA board and so forth. And it got more and more complicated. But the upshot of it was that eventually CARA decided to fund a couple of welcome signs to Albany, one of them to replace the one on Highway 20, and to put a new one up on Highway 99 East or Pacific Boulevard or off the off-ramp on I-5 near Waverly Lake. And so that was the deal. And it turns out that has finally happened. The signs were manufactured by Extreme Graphics, evidently.
Mm-hmm.
And they were put up by an outfit called Dialed Up Construction. And I guess 4S supplied the crane that put them up yesterday. I didn't actually make it to the actual installation, but I went by there on the bike later on and just took some pictures of the new signs. And they look pretty good, especially the one on Highway 20, because you can actually see it as you drive by. The one on the off-ramp or near Waverly Lake had to be put in a place that is not quite as visible, at least to mm-hmm. me anyway. And that's because of ODOT right-of-way. They didn't want it right on the highway. They wanted it, and so it is a little bit under some trees near Waverly, in Waverly Park. Chances are, you know, people coming off that off-ramp at 60 miles an hour, as they do, they shouldn't, but they do, they're probably not going to pay a whole lot of attention to that sign.
Now, it could be made more visible. I know that you were talking about the angle of your photograph of the one at the off-ramp on Pacific. That particular one, if they moved that food sign further See, that would be further east. Then they could make that sign more visible, the Albany Welcome sign, if they did that. Now, who's in charge of the food sign that says that up ahead there's a Burger King, Subway, and Burgerville, et cetera?
Well, I think those signs are all ODOT signs.
So ODOT could possibly move that a little bit.
It could, but I don't know if it's really necessary. I mean, it's not as though anybody doesn't know where they're going when they're coming off that off-ramp.
Yeah, but you got this big, beautiful Welcome to Albany sign. It really is gorgeous. It'd be nice to show it off a little more there in that spot.
Sure. Although, yeah, it is. But it's not, you know, the most important thing in the world. But it's...
Well, all right. I'll concede that. It's not the most important thing in the world.
But it's there, and it does say something about, you know, we're proud of the town and so forth.
It makes you proud to see it. It looks really nice. And here's something you haven't mentioned yet. Well, I'll let you mention it. But the handwriting or the font, if you want to call it that, for the word Albany is very special in this case. It's historic.
As was explained to me by Marilyn Smith at City Hall, this handwriting it attempts to copy the handwriting on a deed that is from 1866 and was apparently signed by or made out by a guy named Archibald?
Yes.
Monteith, who was one of a relative of the Monteith brothers that founded Albany, or that part of Albany. Anyway. Mm-hmm.
He went by Archie to his friends.
Archie, right. Oh, right. Any case, so this handwriting kind of replicates the way people wrote, at least this guy wrote, in 1866. And
I like how he wrote. It looks nice.
It has a certain class to it, and so it makes sense. And but of course, people who read the sign, especially at 60 miles an hour, or even see it, they're not going to get this story. So I don't know how you get people to understand the significance of this of the lettering.
You know, I don't think people have to understand it. I think just the fact that it is significant and that it is historic just makes it special, even if a lot of folks don't know.
Right.
It's pretty neat.
Well, people who will have read the story in the paper and or on HH Today, they may remember it, and they may tell visitors to Albany, hey, did you know about the lettering on the welcome sign? Would you like to know about the lettering?
Yeah.
And so that story is going to go on for a little while.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that they did what they've did, and there's going to be a few more put up in a few other places.
Well, so, I think the welcome signs are that's it.
I thought that they hadn't quite installed all of them yet. So
there are some additional signs to be put up by the Downtown Urban Renewal Program in the wayfinding way.
All right. So
but those I don't think are the same size or in any similar locations.
Right.
There are just some more signs around downtown.
Well, here's something, Hasso, that is sort of just been gurgling in the background, so to speak, but has not been on our minds, either not at all or at least not very much, and that is there's an election coming up.
Well,
holy cow.
You know, if you drive around the Mid-Valley, Linn County, Benton County, you obviously get the idea that something's off. Off, yeah, but also something's up in the sense that you got all these campaign signs.
Yes.
And you see these signs, and most of us are kind of puzzled. What are these people running? Who are they, and what are they running for? And you haven't really read much about this election because, obviously, of the course of events that take precedence over the coming election. But I was reminded of the election the other day, but when I noticed a little sign on Elm Street in Albany that called attention to a city ballot measure that's on the ballot for the election that is, and by the way, we're talking obviously here about the primary election that is that ends on May 19th. Starts about a couple of weeks before then, when ballots are mailed out. So that'll be sometime in early May. You should get ballots on this, and then you get a couple of weeks to vote. And by the way, you don't have to have a stamp anymore to send your ballot back in.
That's right. Governor Brown took care of that.
The legislature changed the the law, and so now you can just, it's supposed to be free. You know, I can't offhand remember whether that law is actually in effect for this primary election, but I think it is. That'll make it a little easier for some people because they don't have to worry about getting a stamp. But to get back to the election, that particular sign that I was talking about reminded me of the city measure, and it has to do with a local option tax levy that expires a year from this next year. But the city council decided they would ask voters to try to renew it a year ahead of time because just in case the voters say no, they get another chance, maybe a couple of more chances to ask them to approve it. This is very important to the Albany police and the fire departments because some of their positions depend on this measure being in effect. In order to enhance the chances that voters approve it, the city council decided not to increase the rate of this tax levy. It's going to stay at $1.15 per thousand as it has been for the last 4 years.
And that was even though they probably could actually use the extra income.
Well, you know, who couldn't use extra income all the time?
Well,
but that's right. I mean, the city has been talking about some budget woes, especially budget woes coming up, and some positions that were left vacant for a while and so forth. Yes, if they had more money, they could fill those positions and they'd be in better shape for the next several years. But the council also realized that, people have sometimes have trouble, and they weren't even anticipating the outbreak, the pandemic. They were just thinking generally of tax obligations and so on. So, taxes are always going up on the state level and the local level, and so the council showed some restraint and saying, look, we're just going to keep this rate at the rate that it is now and not try to increase it. Hoping that people will approve it, but that's what's on the agenda. And to make the point clear, the city really depends on this thing passing, because if it doesn't, the police and the fire department and the ambulance service would be diminished. They would be quite up to snuff the way they are now. So that's what's on the ballot. That's probably the most important and has the greatest consequences for people in Albany anyway. And then, of course, we have the whole gamut of other things going on the ballot. And interested. I looked up the candidates or the filings on the Secretary of State's website and on the county websites for Lynn and Benton County, because I really hadn't paid a whole lot of attention who filed. I mean, the filing deadline was early in March, and I didn't see a whole lot of attention being paid to people who had actually filed for office. So I looked up the names, and many of them, of course, I didn't know. But I was interested to note that in Lynn County, District 17 has been represented by Sherry Springer in the legislature and the Oregon House for many years. And she's now decided to retire from that and run for county commissioner instead. And so she's a Republican, and there are six Republicans scrambling to fill her seat, to at least to be nominated to fill her seat.
Right.
Only one Democrat, somebody from Staten, is running. And I'd never heard of most of those people, or actually any of them, frankly. Many of the signs you see in Lynn County are of some of those Republicans who are trying to replace or succeed Jerry Springer in the Oregon House. So there are six of those, and you have on May 19th, you get a chance to pick one of those if you're a Republican. The other thing I noticed was that Congressman Peter DeFazio, in Oregon's 4th District, he's been in that district in that office since the 1980s. And for all I know, he can stay there until he no longer wants to be there. But so he's running for re-election, obviously, and he is opposed by a couple of people on the Republican side. And I was surprised. I listed them, and I was embarrassed that I didn't recognize one of them. The name was Alex Garlatos. He's a guy from Roseburg. He's a candidate for the Republican nomination for Congress in the 4th District. And one or two of the readers of HH Today kindly pointed out who this guy is. I had just completely skipped my mind. You know, he was one of the, he was a National Guard veteran, and he was one of the three American and one Frenchman who in 2015 disarmed a would-be terrorist on the train to Paris.
That's pretty impressive credentials right there.
Well, he was, you know, really famous at the time, but his name skipped my mind when I saw it on this list of candidates. Turns out that he is, and he also was on Dancing with the Stars. And I have never watched that program, so I guess maybe I can be forgiven for not knowing that. But then Scarlatos, along with his friends, they played themselves in the movie about their exploits on the train to Paris. Mm-hmm. The movie is called The 517 to Paris, and it's based on their autobiography, which had been written with the help of somebody named Jeff Stern. In any case, Scarlatos is not the first time that he's running for office in the 4th District. He also ran for Douglas County. He's from Roseburg, and he ran for Douglas County Commissioner in 2018. Evidently, he didn't win, because now he's running for the Republican nomination to challenge Peter DeFazio, long-term congressman in the 4th District. I kind of hope he makes it, because it'd be interesting to have a guy like that being in the race and appearing with DeFazio on the stage on candidate forums and all that kind of stuff. Assuming during the summer, the fall, that the coronavirus thing will be over and we'll have candidate forums again.
Right. He could look pretty impressive physically next to Peter.
Well,
Peter's a diminutive fellow and, has a kind of a bookworm appearance. You know, he's a nice enough guy. I've met him a couple times. He seemed nice to me, like a good fellow, but he's not exactly, when you just from a visual standpoint, he just looks like a normal guy, but Mr. Scarlatos is more rugged.
Well, you know, in the fourth, obviously this doesn't mean anything to voters.
No, but sometimes appearances matter. You remember the old TV debates where Richard Nixon refused to wear the makeup in the debate against John Kennedy.
Yeah, made a big mistake.
He did, because he looked really bad on there, and Kennedy looked smooth and nice and polished, you know. So who knows?
You remember this, actually? Did you see those debates?
I've just read all about it. They would have occurred
in 1960.
Yeah, so, yeah, I was not around.
Saw the debate.
You watched them. What were your impressions at the time?
I don't remember much about my impression at the time.
What can you remember, though?
I was like 16 years old, and I didn't much care about, or 17, yeah, 16, I guess. But I do remember watching it on this, you know, black and white TV in Southern California. It was, and I don't remember Nixon looking particularly bad. I remember
when you see the old videos of it, though, you can see him. He looks sweaty and clammy and, you know, and just does not look as good as Kennedy did, because he was all fixed up and purtified.
Well, in any case, we can look. If Alex Scarlatos wins the Republican nomination, and, you know, I don't know, he's running against some guy, say, Eugene from Eugene, for the Republican nomination. Chances are, the guy from Eugene have more of a chance in the 4th District.
So do you figure Sherry Springer is going to end up in the Linn County Commissioner's or as the Lincoln
High
Commissioner?
Well, you know, I don't know. There are a whole bunch of people running against her who are also competing for that county commissioner. So we'll see. I mean, she has, you know, the inside track, I would say. But you never know until it's over in this particular case, I would think.
So is there a bike ride planned for today, my friend?
Listen, there's a bike ride planned every day. That was my thing about, you know, being socially distant and socially isolated, especially during the period of the corona days, but even any other day. I just like riding a bike.
Yeah, and you've certainly got some good weather in store here for the next week or so.
Is that
to
right?
Enjoy the. Oh, yes.
Oh, that's good news.
Oh,
Jeff.
Yes. You're going to love it. You're going to love it, my friend. And I do hope you. I hope you enjoy yourself.
Yeah, I plan on it.
All right. Well, be safe. Stay home. Be safe as much as possible, folks. And let's power through and make this work. And maybe next week when we're talking, we'll have some real good news about numbers coming down. That would be great.
Well, let's hope so.
All right. Take care, friends. See you next Tuesday.
Just a few reasons why Jacopetti's is the caterer you'll want for your next big event. Cost. Not only are they reasonable, but Debbie works with your budget to design the perfect menu to please even the most discriminating guest. Choice. Jacopetti's offers many different menu options, casual to formal. Service. Set up and serving if you desire, so you don't have to worry about anything except what you're going to wear. For your next event, big or small, let Jacopetti's make you the successful hostess.
Call 541-926-9660.
If you're being relocated and planning on having your car shipped, I have some timely advice that should help both you and your car make it through with a minimal amount of hassle. Today's car care tip is just around the corner.
When you take your vehicle in for service, you expect the shop to fix the problem and get you back on the road. But how do you know if the technician who's working on your car has the training and experience to do the job right? Well, the next time you walk into an automotive service center, pause for a minute at the front door and look for a Blue Seal sticker. A Blue Seal from the National Institute for Automotive Service Excellence means that the technicians in that shop have been tested and accredited by ASE to perform first-class automotive service. And ASE-certified technicians have to keep current on today's increasingly complex systems because to stay certified, they have to be retested every few years. Most ASE-certified technicians proudly wear the blue and white ASE shoulder insignia, and many of the shops they work in display their technicians' credentials in the customer waiting area, listing their exact areas of expertise, such as brakes or engine repair. So look for that blue seal the next time your car needs work. It's a sure sign that you're going to get quality service.
With more people moving than ever before, a lot of car owners are arranging to have their vehicles transported while they hop on an airplane to their new hometown. If you do, make sure you know how long the move will take. Clean your vehicle thoroughly and put a fresh coat of wax on it. Take pictures both inside and out before shipping. Make sure you agree with any damage pointed out by the shipping agent before you sign the authorization. And inspect your car upon delivery before you sign the release. Finally, make sure your insurance carrier covers full replacement value. The shipping company is required to carry insurance, but it might take a lot longer dealing with them than with your own agent. Happy trails. For the Car Care Council, I'm Roger Kwapik.
I'm going to kindergarten, and I'm going to learn to read. Each month, I get books in my mailbox. You can get books, too. All you have to do is sign up.
Enroll now in United Way's Imagination Library online at unitedwaylbl.org. This free book gifting program mails high-quality, age-appropriate books each month to children ages birth to five. Start your child's reading journey today.
I love to read.
Locally owned and operated, this is the very independent News Talk 1580 KGAL, Lebanon, Albany,